Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. It is chaos in the world, but we're here, Sondra. We will be here unless we are no longer alive.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, even though a lot of wrestling has stopped and there might be less. I feel like you'd think that if wrestling kind of is stopping and isn't putting on tons of shows that there would be less to talk about, but you'd be incorrect.
There's a lot to talk about. It changes every day. Like I remember listening to Meltzer earlier on this week, and he said that he's never rewritten the main story of an Observer ever more than he has with this one.
Well, because everything's changing kind of hour by hour, day by day. And, you know, right now, like, for instance, WWE is saying that there's going to be a WrestleMania that's two nights at the Performance Center. But who knows if that's even going to be possible? Like, by next week, that could change again. You never know.
It's a consistently changing thing, so we're going to be talking on this podcast about all the WrestleMania situation, what's going on. We're going to do a full review of AEW, and then on the overrun, we might try and talk, because NXT was obviously more of a recap show, but the Gargano Ciampa stuff was absolutely excellent, so we might try and cover that on Patreon in a couple of days, which basically just recapped their whole feud with them doing talking heads for the whole thing. Which was,
I am interested, like, full disclosure, I haven't seen NXT yet, and I am interested to watch the Gargano Ciampa thing. I'm interested if they can change my mind about Johnny Gargano being the babyface.
I think I don't know if they'll change your mind, but I think that they will be able to, they put a good case across of, like I'll give you one example, just a tiny example. So you know when Johnny Gargano had his match with Andrade, and Ciampa attacked him after the match? So Ciampa, when he's doing the talking head, he's like, look, I didn't attack him during the match. I didn't cost him his title shot. I was going to give him his moment, and then I was going to take mine. And he couldn't even do that. And, like, the idea of, like, I didn't cost him his title.
Yeah, but that's,
he,
like, that's still a shitty thing to say.
But then Gargano, like, I mean, look,
that's still shitty. You still attacked him.
Yeah, but then Johnny Gargano now is just as bad as him, because he's done the exact same thing. So they're both as bad as each other now. But Gargano's quite good in it as well. He's like basically been like, I was gonna get in there, and I was gonna be two steps ahead of him, and I was gonna get my revenge. And so if like me, you're not someone who immediately can tell you the entire through thread of the story, they do a very good job in like an hour of going through it and making it kind of all make sense. So it's well worth a watch. We'll talk about it on the overrun at the weekend. So I guess we should talk about the changes.
Has NXT, this is something that I'm just not sure about, has NXT said that they're just not going to do wrestling shows anymore?
No, they've not said that. I think they're taping, so one of the stories from the John Pollock at the Post, or Wrestling Post, or is it the Post? Anyway, the thing he's at is not Law anymore. He said that WWE are taping like a bunch of stuff over the next week, which is going to include like the next two Raws and SmackDowns, some NXTs. There's rumors that the Wednesday NXT before WrestleMania weekend will have the takeover matches. But then by this time next week, I'm guessing that'll have changed. I mean, I can't remember I can't remember the last thing that we knew before it changed. I think after we'd spoken, then it changed to a two-night thing.
Yeah, I think we spoke, and it was supposed to be still on April 5th at the Performance Center. And then, yeah, it was Wednesday, because the two-night thing broke a couple hours after we recorded, and we were going to maybe record again, but I was busy for the evening.
Yeah, so so what they're doing now is they're going to do April 4th and April 5th. They're going to record it mainly, they're going to record WrestleMania mainly at the Performance Center, but also at different locations, with the idea that they can then get away with kind of like less than 50 people at one location, but do different locations.
By different locations, what do they mean?
I have no clue.
A park?
Can you imagine?
Like, are we going to have another, like, Discovery Zone situation like we had on Retro Raw with the hardcore title?
I mean, I'm very curious what they're going to do.
Can we go to the beach?
Sure, why not? Like,
I'm trying to think what other locations they would use, unless it's just like other arenas or something.
I read something about there was like I don't know if it's at the performance. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's at the performance center where they've got like a room that they can do wrestling in, that they can do like graphics to basically like, I don't know, impose like 3D and impose crowds. I don't know. They can do stuff.
So like green screen wrestling?
I have no idea. Times are crazy, Sandra. Times
that sounds amazing.
Crazy.
It would be like Bo Dallas's like post championship win celebration where he went on his Bo Dallas versus the world tour. It could be that level of awesome.
It could be that. It could be mental. So the two cards so far, if I can pull them up here because I, yes. Okay, so the two cards as it stands are on Saturday, April 4th, we're going to get Drew McIntyre against Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship, Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley for the NXT Women's title, The Undertaker versus AJ Styles, and Kevin Owens versus Seth Rollins. On Sunday, April 5th, there will be Roman Reigns versus Goldberg for the Universal title, Shayna Baszler versus Becky Lynch for the Raw Women's title, John Cena versus The Fiend. That's all that's noted for now. I assume that just by deduction that like Edge and Randy Orton in a Last Man Standing match would just be added to the Sunday show. Because there's four
you
matches.
You would think
on. So. They're not doing the Battle Royal, Sandra. I, for one, am devastated.
I mean, hard same. Not really.
Like, don't know how to get through WrestleMania without the Battle Royals.
Of course, they're your favorite. I mean, I like the Battle Royals more than you like the Battle Royals. You're like, they shouldn't exist. And I'm like, I don't know. We're there all day, so why not have a Battle Royal? But I mean, Battle Royals are irresponsible at this point. Like, having 20 people in a ring together is irresponsible at this point. You can't do it.
Yeah, it would be I mean, the Battle Royals, just mainly the reason I don't like them is because they don't matter. And I just hate stuff that doesn't matter in any way, shape, or form. Like, everything.
I'm just bummed for people who want to, like, be a part of the show and now they don't get to be part of the show. Like, I think that's fair.
You know, that is fair. I think the more that the WrestleManias get longer and longer, I come around more to the idea of, like, I don't think that everybody should just be on WrestleMania. But then at the same time, I don't think they should necessarily give four or five of the top spots to part-timers, so that, like, there's a balance
right
that they need to strike. We don't know at this point. I mean, obviously there are other undercard matches that I guess have been scheduled, like the women's tag titles and the SmackDown women's title, but I don't know if they're just basically going to keep it to these eight. So my question to you would be, based on the kind of metrics or the situation of it being empty arena and stuff, do you think they should just do 2-4 match cards and make it shorter events, or do you think they should still try and feature like 6-7 empty arena matches each night? Is that too much? Where do you stand on it?
I don't know. Like, having two separate cards with fewer matches makes a lot more sense, right? Like, it makes more sense if you're going to split it up. Just do your top card, like, do your top programs at this point, because, you know, under normal circumstances, we can debate the merits of having WrestleMania on one day versus 2 days and what that all entails and whatnot. But these are not normal circumstances. These are like, you have to go with a skeleton crew and you kind of have to do what you can. So it seems like running your most important matches that are advertised at this point over the two nights is a good way to go. And I think getting the storylines out of the way and stuff. It depends, though, because if WWE insists on running these shows without wrestling to build up to WrestleMania, then, like, what even are we doing here?
There's a lot of I feel different. I still kind of feel the same about it. Before Wednesday, I was kind of like, I just don't like empty arena wrestling. It's not really my thing. For, like, big budget wrestling, right? Like, for like, WWE, AEW type stuff. And then I watched AEW Dynamite, and I was like, oh. Like, I actively forgot numerous times during that show that it was in an empty arena. Like,
well, didn't I say that it was going to be up to performers who knew what they were doing to innovate and to, like, figure out how to make this work? And AEW innovated and figured out how to make it work.
But I don't even think, I mean, I, you know, all credits to the performers. I think the main thing, the main two things that made that show excellent were, number one, and it's so simple, that the hard cam faced the ramp. So you didn't see the empty audience. And then number two, instead of having all these empty seats, they had one side six chairs with baby faces, one side six chairs with heels, and then they became the crowd for the night. And that those two things, to me, made the experience like 5,000 times better than what we saw on the WWE shows. And I'm curious now with SmackDown tonight, as we record this on Friday the 20th of March. Tonight was supposed to be the Kevin Owens show. Anyway, I just remembered that. I'm curious if SmackDown tonight, if they respond, if they do something different. But I think that for WWE to do this, WrestleMania is going to be the oddest two nights of wrestling ever, because WWE are essentially putting together what is like a massive card of the year type thing. You know, Rhea and Charlotte, Drew and Brock, Cena and The Fiend, Shayna and Becky, all these big matches, and there's no crowd, and everything that we've seen so far without a crowd in WWE has been fairly dull. So I just don't know how they get out of this as a winner, but I'm very intrigued to see what they do.
I mean, like, first of all, Firefly Funhouse Puppets as the audience members, but also having wrestlers as audience members makes perfect sense. I mean, I think we said that before they were even going to try and do Raw and SmackDown, and then they did it without anyone in the crowd, which I didn't really understand why they did that. And then I think AEW proved that you don't need many people reacting necessarily. You just need some sort of reaction to make it feel a little bit more interactive. Like, even having, you know, six people on one side, six people on the other side, it didn't feel like an empty arena, because it wasn't. Like, you were still wrestling in front of people. And even if, you know, you were wrestling in front of your, you know, fellow coworkers and whatnot, like your fellow wrestlers, it worked for me. Like, it absolutely worked. And I think it was a lot better than just having no audience. Like, the difference in strategy was very interesting, because WWE was like, right, we can't have people. We're going to kind of like almost point out the flaw in a way. Like, they, like, when I love Daniel Bryan and Drew Gulak's entrance on that SmackDown, where, you know, they were doing the yes chance to no crowd and then just kind of went with it, because they're like, oh, okay, the TV is our audience, we're going to go for that. AEW just took a different approach to it, where they basically were like, okay, we're going to create a skeleton of a crowd, but still kind of that gives you the noise and that gives you the energy that people can feed off. And I think that worked so much better, because doing one show where you kind of like lampshade it and be like, hey, there's no crowd here, and we're going to do all the jokes about how there's no crowd here, that's fine and good, but I don't think that's sustainable. Like, reinventing a crowd works a lot better for me. And well, I've been in very small wrestling crowds, and you can still like play to your audience and play to the performers and all that kind of stuff. It's just, I'm watching it almost the way that I would watch a very small independent show, where it's like, they are performing for me, you know, like, they're not, I'm not feeding off of the crowd in the arena for the reactions. Like, when Brody Lee got revealed as the Exalted One, which I will be gushing about for quite some time, I was the most excited ever. I didn't care if anybody was in that arena reacting or not. I was so happy.
But I care for him, because he was supposed to be.
I care for him, but like, under the circumstances, there's nothing they can do.
No, no, true. But like, I mean,
so I think they did the best that they could.
No, they did. But I think for them, it's, you know, I think that I feel worse, more for the talent than I do for like the audience, because like Drew fought for years. He's now going to win a belt in an empty place. Or like Matt Hardy, who left, and like, I mean, when you watch that ending to Dynamite, if that had been in front of 6,000 people in Rochester, they would have went insane for that. Or like Brody Lee getting, you know, so I think that I feel bad for the performers, because like that moment that Brody Lee was going to have, he didn't get that moment the way he wanted it. And but I think, to your point, is we should definitely commend them for going ahead. And I think that they made those moments, the Hardy and Lee reveals, feel so much more epic than I thought they could with no crowd. So, but I, you know, even Matt Hardy's on Jericho's podcast today, and I've managed to listen to half of it. It is very good if people want to check it out. He's not in character, but they talk about how, you know, like, they had all these plans and they were bummed about it. They were really bummed, but, you know, the show goes on, and Matt Hardy said, you know, that there was, you know, but the upside to doing it in Jacksonville was that in Rochester they weren't allowed to have the drone inside. There was like a rule, okay, like it's in the FCC, that you can't do it, so they were able to do it here. But then Jericho was saying the weird thing was, like, when Vanguard won, the drone was coming down, the plan would be, if you usually have a drone like that, you're feeding off the crowd, but because there's no crowd, Jericho had to kind of keep talking until he saw the thing in front of his face. Mm-hmm. Because he doesn't get the noise, and what you would get, you'd see the audience pointing at it, so you could get it. So there's a lot of different stuff they had to do to work around that I guess they wouldn't have had to do if there was a crowd there. I mean,
yeah, and that makes sense. I think it, I don't know, like, I am bummed for everyone who has to perform in front of, like, you know, an empty audience and whatnot. Like, it sucks. It sucks for them. But I guess I'm just kind of at the point where I'm like, this is our reality for who knows how long. So you just kind of have to, like, forge a new path, I suppose, and just kind of like forge make the best path of what you have, and, you know, like, get in touch with AEW, be like, good job, we're sticking by you. Like, if you really like the wrestling and you want it to return in normal fashion at some point, like, you know, stick by them and kind of hang out during these tough times, and then be really, really excited when it does come back, I guess. It's like, that's the best we can do.
I think something that I'd put a tweet out, I'd retweeted the numbers from AEW and NXT on Wednesday, and it was like AEW had 932,000 viewers and NXT had 542,000, which obviously NXT was a recap show, so it wasn't the same thing. But, like, what I noticed is that when I just retweeted it, because I didn't expect AEW's number to be so high. You know, so I was like, well, good for them. But there's all these people who are very, like, a lot of people seem to be either pro-WWE and anti-AEW or pro-AEW and anti-WWE. Seems to be one or the other. And
I would like to think, necessarily understand, but yeah, it seems to be a thing.
We always try to be fairly impartial to everything, and we just watch it and go, was that a good show, was that not a good show, blah 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 blah. And mm-hmm. the thing that occurred to me after watching AEW was that, like Vince McMahon and Triple H and everybody in WWE, they have all this experience and they are great at what they do, and but when shit hit the fan, they didn't change the show to suit what was going to happen. Like, they didn't change.
No, they still tried to put on a WWE show, with so many restrictions, which you, like, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, you know, on the AEW side, all the things that they've been criticized for, they kind of proved people wrong on Wednesday night, because you've got Cody, who, you know, he's not a wrestling booker before this. Omega, who's not been a wrestling booker before this. The Young Bucks, I guess they've got a little bit of experience booking Being the Elite for the last couple of years, which is, a you know, it is in some ways producing content. And Tony Khan, who, you know, people were calling him a money mark and all that kind of stuff. And they came in and just blew everything that WWE have done so far out of the water. Like, it was astounding to me, the difference. Like, I like DM'd Finn on Facebook, and I was like, I didn't, what was I say? I said something like, you know, I bet WWE are thinking, I bet AEW watched Raw and just went, let's not do that.
Right.
And, like, came out with, I didn't realize that it could be as good as what they did. And I think that's, I'm hoping that that's going to spur WWE on to, because WWE can come out of this looking like, you know, absolute stars, because if they can pull off a WrestleMania that's not in front of a crowd in a time where, like, even, you know that it's bad when David J. McCutcheon is being complimentary to World Wrestling Entertainment.
I know, right?
And he said, he was like, these are the times we need a WrestleMania. Give us the WrestleMania. So I just hope that WWE take, you know, kind of some of the critique of what they did do and didn't do, and just shake some stuff up and give, because if you watch the Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa stuff on NXT this week, it's some of the best produced stuff that's happened in wrestling in ages, because they've got, WWE are great at production, they're great at creating video packages and doing stuff, so just, there must be a way that they can make this work, and I just really hope they do, because it's going to be weird for me, it'll probably be even weird for you, like, that we're, like, at home while WrestleMania is going
on. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's very weird being at home for so many things right now. Like, because, I mean, I haven't been going to WrestleMania as long as you've been going to WrestleMania, but the past 3 years, you know, like, we've been together for WrestleMania time, and it's been...
Yeah, that's our trip, yeah.
Yeah, that's our trip. Like, that's our one big trip a year. Like, I've like, two, maybe, like, three things that I really look forward to in a year, right? Like, I look forward to WrestleMania, I look forward to the Superman celebration in June, and I look forward to Cinco de Mayo in Oklahoma, and all three of those things are not happening now. So it's kind of crazy, right? Like, especially Superman celebration and WrestleMania, where, like, I get to see people that I only see once a year, and everyone's kind of like, just, what do we even do right now? Like, they just canceled Superman celebration yesterday, and some people are like, oh, can we still just go down to Metropolis? And I'm like, probably not a good idea to plan on that at this point. Don't know.
I mean, it's difficult because, and this is kind of like a real life thing, I guess, which is driving me insane, is all the different information. Like, so there was, I saw a thing on Facebook that I shared today where, like, there's a woman who's in China and she was like, I've just been on lockdown for 7 weeks. I'm here to tell you it's not hell. Don't worry. And things get better. Mm-hmm. And they're already starting to, like, their shops are open back up and basically life's back to normal for the most part. The only difference is that people's temperatures get taken when they go to certain public places. So there's that. And then there's, like, the NBA and the NFL, the NBA and the NHL, I think, who have, like, liaised with scientists and different people, and they want to start back up again in July. And that's mm-hmm. kind of the feedback that they've got, that July is a reasonable time to do it and all that kind of stuff. But then you've got other people who are going, this is going to be 18 months. This is good. And you're like, you don't know where to turn. And I think that at this kind of time, at least having, like, some wrestling is good to have. It's good to have WrestleMania.
I think David's point of, like, this is the time when we need a WrestleMania, which is why I hope they pull it off. Like, because I would have said, just have WrestleMania in August when, you know, you normally have SummerSlam. Or just make SummerSlam your biggest show of the year. Like, I guess I'm not as tied to the WrestleMania name as many people. And it's not, like, shade to people who have been supporting WWE their entire lives. But I haven't been supporting WWE my entire life. Like, I fell in love with wrestling through watching WWE. But pretty soon after that, I started finding other things that I liked better. So, like, I'm not as tied to, like, WrestleMania needs to be WrestleMania because WrestleMania, right? And I totally understand that that's how it is probably for, like, you and people who've been watching this forever. But it's also, like, you kind of have to make the best of your circumstances. But, like, I want them to have some sort of WrestleMania or some sort of, if they can put on a party and if they can put on entertainment for people right now, then I think that is important because there are so many people stuck at home not getting to do what they want to do in life. Feels completely upended. Like, again, I'm not used to leaving my house that much anyway, so for me it's not as big of a change as it is for some people, but and I still have to go to work, but I think it is kind of important to, like, bring fans together at this point and say, like, hey, this is something you can look forward to. I just really hope they do it well, because judging by, like, I liked SmackDown quite a bit actually, but, like, judging by Raw, and they need to shake up their rigid format of putting on a WWE performance. Like, they have to break formula, and that's not something that they're necessarily great at right now.
Well, also, it's like, I mean, I know that they obviously want to they're stuck to their format, but I think if they were to do, just for example, if they were to, I think they should completely copy the hard cam idea and the wrestlers at either side, and I think that already you have, like, a much easier show to watch. To be honest, what I would do is I would have those four matches in each night, and I would have, like, 15-minute epic video packages for each match.
Yeah.
Like, talking heads, sit Austin down, sit these people down. Obviously get Michelle McCool to sit down, talk about AJ Styles, because that's what I'm here for. So, like, do all of it, and then... if you've got that, plus, you know, say for example, when Kevin Owens is having his match with Seth Rollins, have Sami Zayn be one of the heels sitting at the match, because he's got a relationship to Kevin Owens. Have the Authors of Pain there. Have Roman Reigns in the babyface side, because, you know, Roman's in action tomorrow night for trying to get the Universal title, but he's here tonight to see that see if Kevin Owens can take down Seth Rollins, because Seth and Roman have got a history. And immediately, mm-hmm. you're going to make really exciting TV, and, like, I think there's going to be a lot of goodwill for the people who are going to want to watch these shows. People are going to be watching these going, I just want to feel like I'm watching a WrestleMania. And they have the capability to do it, and I hope that they basically copy AEW and do it.
Yeah. I hope they do too. And, I mean, I think that they could pull it off. And I think part of it is just, like, you know that Vince McMahon doesn't like to relinquish control, right? Like, he is famous for hating sneezes because it makes you lose control. And now there's, like, an actual disease wreaking havoc on his company and on the world. And that has to be just driving him insane, because it's not something you can control. It's not something that you can just, like, wish away. It's not something you can buy. Like, disease doesn't give a fuck how rich you are. So it's going to take a lot of adapting and a lot of changing and a lot of listening to people. Like, listen to some of the performers on your roster who've performed in front of small crowds. Like, listen to some of the performers on your roster who've not been in this particular situation, but, like, make pro wrestling work for you.
Make pro wrestling work for you. A couple of news notes before we go on to talk about AEW. The latest on the Revival, because I know a lot of people have been kind of wondering what's happening with the Revival. Fightful.com had said that they've been taking off all bookings. They've already earned more than their downside, so basically they're no longer being paid. Dawson, I think, has contracts up early April, and then Wilder is mid-June. They've both asked for the releases multiple times. They've both tried to file loads of trademarks. Dash Wilder, his real name's Dan Wheeler, so he's applied for a trademark to call himself Cash Wheeler.
Okay.
It does sound in the kind of Dash Wilder name book, if you were to.
Yeah.
So I think they're just, so, I mean, if you are listening to this and you do not think they're going to AEW, I think that you maybe need to see a doctor. Very obvious that is what they're doing.
Yes.
But, I get why WWE want to keep them. And while you're under contract, you can't really say that WWE are doing anything wrong because they're under contract. But I think it's just, I respect the fact that they're like, we want to go. Because, look, you know, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, they re-signed their deals, right? And they're earning over like $500,000 a year to do what they're doing, to just be Fall Guys. So I think it takes a lot to bet on yourself. And I know that, I mean, we're still at this point, I mean, if I was a wrestler, I would definitely be like, I want to get to AEW before AEW is not so able to open doors to people who leave.
Well, because AEW doesn't want to be the company that just takes everyone from WWE, right? Like, they don't want to be the people who are like, oh, you were misused in WWE, we'll just give you tons and tons of money. Because that's not sustainable to do that for everyone. And there's so much talent in WWE. And some people are happy still staying there and making decent money and getting to, you know, do whatever they want to do. Like, Tyler Breeze resigned his deal because he was like, I can train at my school and I can work at NXT now and he seems to be happy. Like, good for him. He's like, I'm making tons of money. I'm doing my thing. Whatever. It's fine. But the Revival aren't happy there. You know, like, sometimes people are happy in a job and sometimes it just isn't a fit for other people. And I look forward to seeing the Revival in AEW when that happens. But you're right. Like, it's not going to be an option for everyone forever. Right. And so they have, obviously, like, they just brought in Matt Hardy, who is a WWE guy, but like, he's been kind of all over, so I don't think of him as like an ex-WWE reject or anything like that. But Brody Lee is a guy who, you know, he was in WWE for so long and didn't really get to shine, didn't really get to do much of anything, and that's the kind of person that seems to shine in AEW and do super well. So yeah, but you're not wrong. Like, it's good for the Revival to try and get there before the opportunity runs out, I guess.
Because I think we're going to get to a point soon where they're not going to be able to take, you know, because like, it's going to get to a point soon where they have to start like not taking some people so they don't feel like the place that. But it's funny because, like, you know, Matt Hardy turned up in AEW and the main event scene, and I think he felt like he belonged in that scene, but not in a way that he's like in a smaller, it doesn't feel like he's in like a tiny promotion. Do you know what I mean? It feels like,
no, not at all.
So yeah, I mean, anyway, the other thing that I thought was quite funny was Charles Robinson was on Sean Mooney's podcast and they were talking about, Charles being a referee at WWE, and apparently Vince McMahon has told the referees that if wrestlers aren't paying attention to the 10 count on the outside, to just count them out. And Robinson had said that, like, the problem with that is that now referees are starting to hold up counts after 8 because they realise guys won't make it in by 10. So now referees are like deliberately trying to help wrestlers because they're not timing it right. So I thought it was pretty funny. So I'm going to look out for that going forward. But
now I'm kind of curious to watch it. I mean, if anybody needs a talking to about referees following the rules, it is AEW.
Yes, very, very much so.
And I love the referees in AEW. I love them dearly.
Just be great if they could follow rules at some point.
There's many a shenanigan that goes unseen. Or not unseen, seen and ignored. That's the problem. If it's unseen, then that's wrestling. But if it's seen and just like, that's fine. Just have all of the disqualification things happen and it's fine. I feel like we're back in 1987.
I think there's a weird thing where like, if a company is deemed to be hot, then they can get away with a lot more stuff. But the danger with that is that you don't want to start off on that foot because there will be one day when you're not hot and then you need to, the people will pick at things more. Like, because AEW are doing a very good job at a lot of stuff, they probably get a few passes. They get more passes for the women's division than they deserve.
Yeah.
For a lot of places.
Because it's dire.
It's dire. Like, who was it that said recently the women's division was great? And I was like, what show are you watching?
Someone said that about the women's division? Was it one of the performers?
Yes. It was somebody.
Was it like Nyla?
Cole Cabana. Cole Cabana said it on Dynamite this week.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, like, he has to kind of big up the women's division and whatnot because he's on TV. I was thinking, like, a backstage person saying that about the women's division.
Oh,
like...
yeah, okay, no. But the last thing I wanted to say was, they're also in a bit of a problem because you know how they're trying to build Finn Balor and Walter? The problem with
Finn... that can't happen.
Well, yeah, because Walter can't travel because there's a US travel ban. So I think that I'm about to give away NXT UK spoilers here. So if you watch NXT UK... fast forward 30 seconds from now. So on NXT UK, they basically have taped through to the Dublin Takeover, and at the Dublin Takeover, it's Finn Balor versus Tyler Bate and Walter versus Ilya Dragunov. So I assume that Finn and Walter was meant to happen at the Takeover Tampa Bay. So okay. I don't think that the Dublin Takeover show is going to be happening anyway, but
Well, because it can't. I mean, I guess, could they do a Takeover Dublin without a crowd?
It depends on if the travel is allowed between the UK and Republic of Ireland by the 26th of April. But I mean, there's like a lot of people, this is like real life, but like there's a girl on my Facebook feed today and she was saying like, I mean, I went out... People are out and about. People are just doing what they want to do. And whether, I mean, maybe they're being careful and they're sanitizing and all that, but there are a lot of people out and about. So it wouldn't surprise me if people, especially over this weekend with like it being, you know, if people start going out and stuff, then if people start going out all the time, then they probably will need to be more strict about the kind of shutdowns that they do. So I think they probably will say, you know, you can't fly it with the UK. I mean, I don't even know if you can fly Glasgow to London right now. You probably can, but anyway.
Yeah, right now domestic travel is not like restricted, I don't think, here, but...
No, because most of the AEW guys, they traveled to Florida on Wednesday.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, so anyway... Oh, last thing, sorry, before we talk about AEW, it's got all these notes, Sandra. Daniel Bryan.
There's a lot going on.
There is. Daniel Bryan dropped a little bombshell on the Bellas podcast. Says that he'll be taking off 6 weeks maternity leave when Brie gives birth in August. And then he said that his WWE deal expires not long after that. And he wants to scale back wrestling to about once a month or so. And he just says that he doesn't really feel like he wants to do it all the time anymore. So my question to you is going to be, do you think that changes where he would be? Do you think that a Daniel Bryan in AEW would be... Do you think that with his love of wrestling, as opposed to like sports entertainment as much, that could lead him to go elsewhere? Would you be interested in seeing him go elsewhere?
I would be very interested in seeing him go elsewhere. I think Daniel Bryan in AEW would be... such a good fit for him if that's what he wants. I mean, I know obviously Brie is still very involved with WWE and she's going to still be doing Total Bellas and, you know, she does a lot of ambassador work for them. And she also has, you know, her other businesses with Nikki and whatnot too. So I think it made sense for Daniel Bryan to re-sign with WWE when he did. But if he wants to just focus on wrestling, then I feel like AEW is probably a better place for that if he doesn't want to be on TV all the time. And because they don't have live events and because they don't have, you know, house shows and whatnot, he wouldn't have to travel for those. So it's an intriguing thing to think about. Like if WWE is willing to accommodate his schedule and he can still be a valuable part of their roster, I'm not mad if he, you know, stays there and wants to do that. If they can kind of put him down to a part-time performer and not have him, you know, travel and be gone so much. I mean, he's gonna have, you know, two babies at home, so he wants to be home with them, and that makes sense. But yeah, like, I mean, there are a lot of matches with Daniel Bryan and the AEW roster that I would be very intrigued to see, and I think him wrestling less often is going to make it feel more special too. So having Daniel Bryan be treated like, you know, the special magical miracle performer that he is, I think is important. Like you want him to still feel like a very important person when he's on screen and when he's wrestling, which he does to me still. I know a lot of people think the Drew Gulak stuff wasn't, it was like below Daniel Bryan, but it was like straight from my hopes and dreams, and just warmed my heart to see him be Daniel Bryan again.
Well, I think that whole thing is more indictment in how poorly they've presented Drew Gulak, right? Mm-hmm. Because Drew Gulak is
which should be an actual crime. They should be definitely held to task for that.
Because, like, I like to think that, like, I sometimes can be the bridge of, like, because sometimes you will be like, this person is amazing and that's that. And sometimes I'm like, oh, Sondra, come on. That's like a Sondra person.
But I feel like with Drew, it's not a Sondra, just me.
Yeah, he's like, he is really good. And he's very good at the wrestling. But he's also very good at being a character. There's actually a lot of similarities between Bryan and Gulak that I didn't really
pick
up on.
That's why I like their partnership so much, because they are similar.
Okay, so let's get into AEW Dynamite. They do it at Daly's place in Jacksonville. There is no crowd. I mean, I know we've talked about it a fair bit already, but like, talk to me about the aesthetic of it. What about it worked better than Raw and SmackDown?
I didn't think of it until I was listening to Brian Alvarez mention the hard cam thing that you said, but changing the position of the camera to face the ramp and not just like be facing towards seats, I think worked very well. I think having the arena dark, still being in an arena, worked better than I thought it would. Like, WWE's made the choice to move to the Performance Center, to a very small space, where it definitely feels like a very different show, right? Like, because the Performance Center, just even the ceilings aren't as high and all that kind of stuff. So the look of the arena when AEW opened up was very interesting to me, because it still felt like they were in a big place. And I actually, like, this is so weird, but after Cody's speech that we'll talk about, because it was incredible, when they were like, hit the pyro and let's get started, like, basically, we're going to bring wrestling to you in these crazy times, kind of like what we talked about with WrestleMania. Like, people need wrestling right now. People need whatever they can get to feel normal or to escape or whatever. And when they were like, hit the pyro and let's get started, and they still had pyro for an empty arena, like, I teared up a little bit. I was like, I'm just so glad we have this. And I think that, you know, having the seats dark and not showing that there was no audience, and having just kind of the spotlight or the lights be on the few wrestlers that surrounded the ring, it worked. Like, they nailed the aesthetic, and I wouldn't have been angry at them if they didn't nail it this well day one, because these are unprecedented times and what even the fuck do we do? But they got it. They got it perfect.
They proved that their day one is H.
Their day one is H indeed.
Well, you know, so this is a... I was nervous for watching Dynamite, because I was like, oh God, you know, I just... Because I really... I love watching wrestling. I love watching big budget sports entertainment style wrestling. And the last couple of shows that I'd watched in WWE kind of made me think, oh, is this going to be good? When Cody was doing his promo, I liked Cody. When Matt Jackson and Kenny Omega were out, I wasn't as crazy about it. And I started to kind of get this feeling of like, oh no, is it going to be like, I like the hard cam thing, but I was, before I knew there was going to be wrestlers beside the crowd, I was like, oh, once this is done, this interview, is it going to be just like what we've seen? Mm-hmm. And I think that when the pyro hit and then it changed, I mean, that was for me when I was like, oh, this is different, this is not going to be the same as what we saw. And I think having the commentators there, having JR and Taz and Excalibur on commentary and Tony Schiavone sort of like roaming and doing stuff was a good call, because Schiavone's so good at interviewing people that you just kind of... Like, Tony Schiavone is good at everything. I just love Tony Schiavone.
He really is.
So they opened the show, like you say, with
Do you think it was the right call for them to open the show with a promo like this? Because I think it was, personally. Like, I think they...
I don't think this promo would have... I liked Cody's promo. I wasn't crazy about Omega and Jackson, but I think that if you were going to do this promo, it had to be here, because it was like this promo almost wasn't the show. It was like, this was like the pre part to the show.
It was kind of the prologue. Like, you're gonna see something different, and we're being honest about the way things are in the world. Like, they didn't say there's a coronavirus necessarily, but it felt, because Triple H opened up SmackDown with kind of a similar speech, right? Like, hey, we're gonna do this. We're going to see what we can do in the situation. We're going to do our best. And I mean, I thought Triple H's speech before SmackDown was good, but I thought Cody's was more effective. Like, Cody just is captivating. He just is so captivating in AEW. He reminds me of The Rock. Like, that comparison is just becoming more and more true kind of as we go on with our AEW journey. It's, and our, you know, retro ITR journey. I just see more similarities between the two of them. Cody's just not as disparaging to everyone. So, I really liked that it was Cody that opened it up, and I didn't mind Kenny Omega or Matt Jackson. I mean, I kind of do have that under my breath, like, yes, sanctimonious prick, when I look at Matt Jackson because of the Adam Page storyline, which means that they're investing me, which is good. But I kind of loved it. Like, I loved that they had a little prologue to the show, and they feel like they're being more authentic and honest about it than WWE. Like, WWE is just trying to be like, look, there's no crowd. Look, we're going to be wacky. Look, we're going to try and pretend that everything's not completely fucked. And AEW just kind of feels like they're rolling with the punches a little bit better. It's almost like WWE is trying to, like, wallpaper over a hole in the wall, and AEW is like, let's figure out how to fill this in.
Yeah, the approaches were very different. So we then, after we get the intro from JR, Taz and Excalibur welcome us to the show and run down the card, we go to ringside where Tony Schiavone is interviewing MJF, who is at ringside on the heel side beside Sean Spears. And they're, like, basically taking bets on the matches, and then they ask Schiavone if he wants in on it, and he basically all but confirms that he does want in on it. But he at first, like, says, are you gambling? And MJF is like, I'm not gambling. Don't use that word, but, you know, you're interested. And then Schiavone seems interested, and I was just like, already this feels fun, and, like, you've adapted to the situation.
They feel like humans interacting.
Brandi Rhodes is the ring announcer with her, what do you call the thing? You call it a graphic.
The Chiron?
Chiron. On her Chiron saying she said she'd never announce again, or whatever it was.
I said she'd never ring announce again. Amazing. Amazing. I love that, because she famously did not want to be a ring announcer in WWE. She wanted to train to be a wrestler. And I think she's an incredibly skilled ring announcer. So it's a talent that she has. But if it's not what she wants to do, then, I mean, it's understandable. She should do what makes her happy. But I
love
that.
I don't think she knew about it, because she tweeted later on saying, oh, this popped me, or whatever.
That's so funny.
We opened up with Best Friends against Lucha Brothers, because Pat couldn't get there, so it changed from a six-man, so Orange Cassidy instead was on the outside, and the Lucha Brothers got the win over Best Friends. I think it took me a couple of minutes to kind of get into the groove of what I was watching, but once I was in and you could hear the baby faces and the heels shouting from ringside, I was kind of like, okay, this is fun, I'm into this. So I think it was a good choice for a first match, because it's not like it's a massive storyline-based match, but there is story to it, and it kind of set you up for what the show was going to be, I thought.
Yeah, it did. And I mean, Death Triangle and Best Friends have had dissension in the past weeks, right? Like, Orange Cassidy fought Pac, and the Lucha Brothers have been kind of anti-Best Friends and all that kind of stuff. So it worked. And I mean, the wrestling is always fun. Again, like, these are very skilled performers. They know what they're doing. Having Orange Cassidy on the outside without a crowd, I thought was really interesting, because that's part of what has made Orange Cassidy work so well on TV, is that the crowd responds to him so well. But I think having commentary be like, Orange Cassidy is here and we like him, or whatever. And he just kind of exudes charisma off the television screen, whether there's a ton of noise in the background or not. So this was a lot of fun. I mean, Orange Cassidy got to do his dive onto people, which I don't super understand why that's not a disqualification. But also, I love Orange Cassidy, so I don't know. Like, it's the refereeing in AEW needs some work, but the match itself was fun, and it got me into it. Like, if you watch this as they are performing for me, the television audience member, and not just for a live crowd, like, it's funny to me, because WWE always says that they're a television program and that they're performing for, you know, a worldwide audience. And I think AEW felt like they were performing for the television audience, and having just, you know, the few wrestlers around to make noise and make it feel like it was an interactive process and not sterile was awesome.
Then we got Riho, Chris Statlander, Hikaru Shida, and Penelope Ford in a four-way. Penelope Ford accompanied by the world's blandest twink, Kip Sabian. And they had a fine match. It was still more of the same. Riho, who is decent but just didn't click as champion the way that I think they hoped. Chris Statlander, who's a half alien, half human. Hikaru Shida, who's a good wrestler but she's not really over. And Penelope Ford, who has predominantly been featured on Dark, so there's not, if you're just a Dynamite viewer, there's not a lot to really know about her, or not a lot that you've been given so far. So,
I mean, you know that she's with Kip Sabian and she's Dastardly.
That's about it. So, yes, and Hikaru should have got the win here. It was fine, but it just continues to kind of be like, where are the stories?
And why do they just keep putting women in four ways? I feel like we're watching Ring of Honor here. Like, why can't you have secondary stories with your women? Why is it just like, here's a fatal four-way match to get some women on the screen? And they are good wrestlers. Like, I don't mind the matches, but...
Do you think that their idea is that, you know, they've got a fair few Japanese women and they're more about having kind of exhibition contests rather than being involved in the stories? Like, maybe they can't cut promos or something? Like, is that what they're going for?
I'm sure that's it, but I mean, you can tell stories with performers that don't speak English as a first language, or even if they don't speak English much at all. Like, I think we've seen with Asuka in WWE, this is a compliment I'll give to WWE, like, when they put Asuka out there and just let her speak Japanese and let her be Asuka, she's awesome, right? And she connects with the crowd, and she's great. So, not that people even necessarily need to cut promos in any language, but have a story. Have Chris Statlander and I don't know, Rio, if Rio were a heel, or they make Chris Statlander, that making Chris Statlander a heel is a bad idea. She's like the most likable person, but like have a heel and a face to have an issue with one another over something. It's do something, be having stories. Don't just like throw women out there to have a match that nobody cares about, because I like all of these performers. I was happy to see Hikaru Shida get the win. I would like her to be number one contender. I would like to see Hikaru Shida versus Nyla Rose. I think that could be quite good, but it's just frustrating that all of the women seem to be like flat paper doll people. And they're getting time to wrestle, but I don't feel like there's much more character development than, like, the Divas era at this point.
Not really. The most interesting thing about this match was the post-match promo from Colt Cabana. And that's, like, not a great
sign. Yeah, because Colt Cabana was watching the match ringside, and was he talking to Tony?
Yeah, so Tony was talking to him, but, you know, being in AEW and... you know, the weird lack of crowd thing, and then he sort of mentioned that Penelope Ford could have won if she wasn't scheming with her boyfriend. I mean, they actually did do pretty decent camera work here of, like, as he said that, it panned back and Kip Sabian was behind him, and then, like, you know, they got in a shoving match, Cabana slapped him.
Yeah, because Kip Sabian was kind of in the background helping Penelope Ford out because Penelope Ford, like, hurt her back or something like that, right? So he was, like, kind of trying to get her up and get her out of the ring, and then Kip Sabian heard that Colt Cabana was talking shit about him and his girlfriend, and Kip Sabian kind of came over and, like, at Colt Cabana, and Colt Cabana slapped Kip Sabian, and it was like, ooh. But, like, why do the women have to be used to get the men's storylines over when you could be, I don't know, having women's storylines too? It's just a thought. It's just an idea to throw out there.
It's a very valid one. Oh, wow. So just as we're talking here, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, has just deemed that as of tomorrow, bars, pubs, restaurants will all close as of tomorrow. Forced to close.
Wow. So are they going to be able to do, like, takeaway and stuff like they
takeaway,
do here?
Takeaways will still be open. Takeaways will be excluded from the new measures, but yeah.
But dine-in service, good. It needs to happen. We've had that here for... I don't know, a few days now? It feels like it's been weeks, but it hasn't. It's only been
a few days. I'm not the biggest Boris Johnson fan in the world, but good on him. Fucking get that message out there. So then we got Moxley did an interview outside with Tony Schiavone. It was kind of, he wasn't medically cleared, but he said he didn't want to punch any cops. He was just going to drive off, blow off some steam, and then he drove the Ford GT that he stole from Jericho.
Such a good detail.
I'm not a car guy, but even I'm like, I'd fucking love to drive that car. And I'm not a car person, so. Marco Stunt, I should also mention, was ill, which is why, I he has coronavirus, but he just wasn't well, so he ended up not being there, so it ended up being a tag match with Jurassic Express against the Butcher and the Blade. The Butcher is how I feel after every takeaway that I eat. I feel like I look like the Butcher afterwards.
The monocle?
I mean, I don't have a monocle, I need to get one off eBay. So the Jurassic Express and Butcher and the Blade have this match. It's really good. There was one, what was the moment, the bit at the end where, like, so I mean, Luchasaurus, I've got to give him props. He's been so much better recently. I assume he's now completely recovered, which is why he's able to do a lot of the stuff that he wasn't able to do. Mm-hmm. And he's great. But, like, at the end, MGF calls for Butcher and the Blade to do their finish. But there's a delay, so Jurassic Express recovered. And then... Was this the bit where Luchasaurus was doing something to, was basically about to pin Blade, and then Jungle Boy, like, went to do a dive, but just then, like, there was no need, there was, like, Butcher wasn't up, so he just like quietly got out of the ring. And just
kind of
it was very weird.
There was some timing stuff in this match that was kind of weird, and that happens, you know, like wrestling's very difficult.
Do you know what though, like there's been a few matches now with Jurassic Express where timing issues have happened, and it's becoming a slight bit of a pattern, so I hope they can work on it, whatever it is, because like, you know, if we were watching another show, we would 100% be like, how can this be happening? Like, so I think that, like, yeah, it can happen now and then, but when it's happening 2 weeks in a row with the same performers, like, they need to work on it, and they need to work on it ASAP. I think that's fair to say, right? Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair to say. I still really like them. I still really like their matches. It's a bummer that Marco's sick. I know, like, right now, if you are sick with anything, like, stay home. Do not go out. Because
if you have an STD, do not leave the house.
Yeah, exactly. Don't fuck anyone or shake their hand. Or both at once.
What a message from Sondra for Senna. Don't fuck anyone, just wash your hands.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I liked the match. I still liked it. I didn't like, JR bugs me during some of these matches, like where you can tell that it's more comedy stuff and it's not necessarily up his alley, and you can tell he absolutely doesn't give a shit about them. And it's starting to really kind of grate on my nerves, where he's like, you know, Luchasaurus, like, he's good, but I don't like his mask. And Excalibur is like, what? Why? Like, why don't you like his mask? Like, it looks like a giant CPAP mask. And it doesn't. Like, I used to sell CPAP masks. It does not look like that at all, even a full face one. And also, like, why are you shitting on the babyface and his aesthetic choice?
Fair. I mean, that's a fair question to ask.
It takes me out of the matches. Like, he's becoming more of a detriment than a help in some of these situations. And he still has good calls sometimes, but I don't know, like, some of the stuff, he just, like, he doesn't get Orange Cassidy, or, like, he doesn't get Luchasaurus. And if you don't get it, like, either learn to get it, or this isn't the job for you.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I think it's, I like commentary generally, but I know there are some things that people would rather didn't happen. But yeah, I think that there needs to be, like, a very base level of, like, well, it's like, I don't want someone to bullshit me when they're on commentary. Like, I want to hear what they think. But then I think you also have to have a certain level of, like, I mean, if you hate it, you kind of have to still just do it.
I want to hear what they think when it's, like, when it's constructive. And if there were a constructive, like, oh, he went for a move and didn't hit it, or, like, he didn't get all of it, then say, like, oh, he was tired from this or whatever and, you know, didn't get all of that move, or, oh, he didn't get all of that move. Is his opponent going to capitalize on it? That's the kind of, like, criticism and honesty that I like. His mask looks stupid to me. Is unhelpful, because that's part of his entire character and part of his entire aesthetic. Like, why are you trying to call that silly or stupid when that's one of the things that's, like, a main characteristic of Luchasaurus, in addition to being a great wrestler and very, very big?
Well, I mean, yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, Kane's mask looked...
Can you imagine in 1990, was it 1997 that Kane did it? 1998?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 97.
Like, can you imagine if instead of, like, it's Kane, that's gotta be Kane, by God, JR was like, well, I don't know why he wears that mask, it looks stupid. That would take you out of the whole thing.
Yeah, it would. So it's, I get it. I mean, it's a completely valid complaint. And I think that, I mean, it's funny because when I was on tour with JR, like, he would say things that really resonated with me as a fan, about certain styles of wrestling, like, mm-hmm. about, like, the Young Bucks and stuff. And he was like, I'm just never gonna... His whole point, which I think is fair, is that he just can't pretend that, you know, doing 20 plancha dives matters. Because they're always useless. They never matter, and they never affect the match in any way. So I get that. I think that's fair to kind of go, it's stupid. But
then should he be commentating Young Bucks matches?
It's, for somebody like me who doesn't like that kind of stuff, I'm like, yeah, I'd rather hear that you just... But he doesn't shit on it. He just doesn't comment on it. He just kind of works around it. But I think we're here... The comparison I would make is, I think that's fine if you don't like something and you're just not going to put it over. Don't put it over. But I think that if you've got somebody like Luchasaurus that you are actively sort of... And maybe he meant it as a joke. I don't know if he did. If he did mean it as a joke, the joke didn't land. And if he didn't mean it as a joke, then it just wasn't constructive. And Luchasaurus is good, so I mean, he's good, so it's... Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. Anyway, up next we got the Dark Order coming out. They're going to introduce the Exalted One when Christopher Daniels and Kazarian are on the babyface side of the crowd. And they're like, come on, you know, you've claimed for ages there's an Exalted One. There isn't one, it's just the two of you. And then we get a video on the screen. The Exalted One has a big white and black cloak on. And he calls Daniels an old man. He takes the hood off, and it is Brody Lee.
Yay.
He says that, you know, old man, you're not the first old man that didn't believe in me. Burn.
What a good line.
He said, let us in. And then we cut back to the arena, and Brody Lee is behind Daniels and Kazarian. They beat SCU up. Brody Lee is now the Exalted One, the head of the Dark Order, and TBC. I think this was a great reveal. I think this is good for Brody Lee. The thing is, for everybody who saw something in Brody Lee / Luke Harper, this is now his chance to prove those people right. And for the people who haven't quite got the fuss about him before, this is his chance to prove those people wrong. Because Dark Order have always been like really fun at the vignettes side of stuff, but the side that I think a lot of people have not gravitated towards them as much is like the in-ring presentation of them. And now they have this leader, and they have Harper, Brody Lee, who's great. So now this should hopefully kind of fix that. And I think that he is the ideal choice to be the leader of the Dark Order. Sondra, tell me your thoughts.
He is the ideal choice to be the leader of the Dark Order. I'm so happy about this. Like, legitimately to the point where I'm just still smiling about it and wearing, like, one of my old Wyatt family t-shirts just to celebrate the fact that Brody Lee is the Exalted One. It's made my week. Like, I'm so happy about this. It's a dumb entertainment thing. And you know what? I love being super happy about a dumb entertainment thing, especially when it means that a guy like Brody Lee, who did get overlooked in WWE and whose talents were never used properly in WWE. Like, I don't like to be the person that's like, WWE buries people and they squandered my favorite people, but they squandered my favorite person. Like, they have this guy who is great at talking and great at wrestling and great at being just a fine specimen of a human being, because he looks great. And now he's the Exalted One, and I'm so happy. And I think that he brings a level of star power to the Dark Order that I think is missing for probably people like you who, you know, want there to be more of like a, just kind of like a person to gravitate towards. Because, like, I mean, Stu Grayson and Evil Uno I like a whole lot, but they're not necessarily like a big name that you're going to get super excited about if you're an outside viewer who doesn't know who they are.
Well, I've always found Evil Uno just to not be a believable lead guy. So now that there's a new lead guy who I do believe in, I think it will make it a much easier presentation.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And, like, I don't know if you follow Evil Uno on Twitter, but the day leading up to the reveal...
He was great. Macaulay Culkin's not the Exalted One. Dead. I died.
Yes. Like, I loved it. Just all of the people who weren't the Exalted One. And I was just like, this is brilliant. And, I mean, I know a lot of people were expecting Matt Hardy to be the Exalted One and for that to be the big reveal. I said weeks ago, of course, like, I'm biased because I love Brody Lee. But also, I think Brody Lee fits better as the Exalted One, because then Matt Hardy can just be Matt Hardy. And he can do his thing, and he can be broken, and he can do his whole universe, but not have to try to, like, shove that into another existing storyline. Like, Matt Hardy is great when he is creating Matt Hardy stuff on his own. So if you can have Matt Hardy creating great Matt Hardy stuff on his own, and then you also have Brody Lee as the Exalted One, Brody Lee who has cult experience, Brody Lee who is a very dynamic leader, Brody Lee who just, I'm so happy, Kenny. Like, I'm so happy about this, because I love the Dark Order anyway. You know this, I am a Dark Order apologist, but, like, if you thought I was a Dark Order fan before, and I was, like, I'm ready to get out there and start recruiting. Like, give me the flyers. I will go door to door. I mean, I won't right now. Obviously, like, social distancing is very important. But, like, I'm just so happy. I'm so happy, and I can't wait to see what he does. I just,
It was a great review. It was a great review.
There's so much joy. Like, from the first graphics, I was like, ooh, I'm getting kind of, like, culty vibes. Could it be? Because, like, I didn't watch AEW live, and I'd heard you had not told me who the Exalted One was, and I specifically avoided it just so that I could have this moment of glee. And then when I was like, is it going to be good, I think is what I asked you, and you were like, you will be happy. So I was like, I think it's going to be him. Like, I think, and I had seen one other person text me just like, holy shit, yay, but didn't say what they were texting me about. And I was like, I just have a feeling. Like, I had a feeling that it was going to be him, and then it was, and it was perfect.
It was brilliant. And then from there, we got a Jake Robertson, Lance Archer interview where Jake was like, you know, it's a slap in the face for them to Cody to ignore them. It's personal now. They're going to do something to get his attention. And then we got this video package, which I just was like, this is so good. So there's like a little person who is in a ring in the middle of the woods somewhere, which apparently was at Darby Allin's house, but that, there you go. Mm-hmm. And Lance Archer goes in and beats everybody up and just kills them and leaves them all lying in a literal heap as Jake Roberts sits in a rocking chair smiling and clapping. This was great.
This was great. I loved this. Like, Jake Roberts kind of being the old veteran dude who's encouraging Lance Archer just to be a killer. Murderhawk himself. Like, amazing. I love it. Like, I'm here for Lance Archer. Like, do you understand, Kenny, that we can get Lance Archer versus Brody Lee in AEW?
It could be very exciting.
Lance Archer versus Luchasaurus. Brody Lee versus Luchasaurus. There are so many things that are possible in terms of like just big meaty men slapping meat and having great matches, and I'm so happy about it.
Lance Archer and Cody will be a killer match.
Oh yeah, very excited about that. Very excited about that.
Honestly,
Jake Hager versus Lance Archer. I'm into it.
I don't know if this was on the TNT version of AEW. If it wasn't, go to the... Because I always watch the fight version, so I never know what's on what. But like,
I watched the fight version this week.
Okay. But Sammy Guevara and MJF sing Judas to Jericho to pop him. Like,
so good.
This is the kind of stuff that people... like, in the Attitude Era and stuff like that, where people like stuff, it's like, people were like doing stuff to pop each other and like doing fun stuff. And, you know, like Matt Hardy, when he was on Jericho's podcast, said that it's a very laid-back atmosphere where, like, you can be in on your own creative. So like, if Sammy Guevara wants to just like sing Judas to Jericho, he can. And I think that you can just see they're all having fun. It makes you want to have fun.
Oh yeah. Like when performers are having fun on screen, it does resonate with you. Right. And I think that, you know, sometimes that can maybe go a little far. Like when you have, I don't know, like a Hulk Hogan in WCW doing whatever the hell he wants, or we've seen DX on Retro when they think that they are hilarious in their backstage segments and they are just super not. But the difference here seems to be that Sammy Guevara and the Inner Circle and pretty much like everybody on the show that just kind of interacts, they're not doing it to the detriment of anyone else. And they're not doing it because they want to just get themselves to be prominent and whatnot. They're just having a good time. And it's so much fun. And singing Judas and just going crazy with it and just like getting super into his performance. I love Sammy Guevara. Sammy Guevara is a treasure. Like, I think he's such an important part of that show. And
I think he's maybe the biggest turnaround.
Yeah.
In the company. The main event is the Elite versus the Inner Circle. Paige, Matt Jackson, and Cody against Santana and Ortiz and Jake Hager.
Adam Handwash Paige, social distancing since November.
I love him so much. He is my favorite wrestler. This match was a ton of fun. It went very long, but there was so much kind of shenanigans stuff and Jericho in commentary who was just phenomenal. Like there was one point where he said, what was it he said? He was like, oh, it was something about Arn Anderson. He was like, I don't need to wear a waistcoat and sweatpants to be a coach.
Yeah.
Like, and just like, you know, giving Anderson shit. Cody gets in a scuffle with MJF and Wardlow at one point. There's like story stuff with Matt Jackson and Paige throughout the match. But in the end, the Inner Circle got the win because they were able to beat Matt Jackson. And then Jericho is doing a promo where he bans fans from all future AEW events, even if the world gets better. Tremendous line.
And yep, it's because of Jericho. Because of Jericho, there will not be fans at future AEW events.
Now, why this worked so well for me, and I thought it was great, was that I did not see this coming one iota. I thought Dustin Rhodes was going to be the fifth member. I didn't expect a reveal here, and it was only when Jericho said, oh, it's 5-on-4, and then I heard a noise, and when I saw Vanguard 1, I was in bed, and Steve Gunn was beside me, and he had been, like, half going to sleep, but, like, he kept turning around to watch the show, and he didn't understand what it was, and I was like, it's Vanguard 1, and he, like, sat up as if, like, turbulence had just happened on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And then Matt Jackson said he called in a favor. We hear the piano music, which was being played live by Remy Hardy, and it was broken Matt Hardy, and he's now in the Elite's team for Blood and Guts, and this was perfect.
This was perfect. I loved it. I did know that Matt Hardy was going to appear on the show, but it didn't ruin it for me at all. Like, as soon as I saw Vanguard 1, was it Vanguard 1 or did Vanguard 1 get destroyed? Because someone on Twitter was like,
oh, it's Vanguard 2.0. Yeah.
It's Vanguard 2.0, right? Because I didn't remember that, but it was pointed out to me, and I think that's correct, that this is going to be Vanguard 2.0, which, like, any Vanguard is cool with me. Honestly, I just want there to be drones involved in wrestling. So I loved it. I loved the way they did it. I loved Vanguard 1 kind of coming up on the screen, and you see Vanguard 1 before you see Matt Hardy, and you're just like, oh my gosh, he's here. And then when they panned up to him on his platform or whatever, doing his thing, just looking resplendent in his robe, I thought it was perfect. It was, the only issue was it was maybe a little bit rushed at the end. Like, it was a very cool big reveal, and then it just kind of was like off. And maybe that's where a lack of crowd obviously like made it feel maybe slightly less epic, just because they had to just kind of cut, because how long can you really like focus on Matt Hardy just doing his delete chants? But under the circumstances, this was as perfect as it could possibly be. I loved it. I'm happy to see Matt Hardy. And I'm happy that he is going to be Matt Hardy and not just like not trying to shoehorn into another story. Like, he's Matt Hardy. He's awesome.
I would recommend, if anybody gets the chance, listen to the Jericho podcast. It's very good. And also, he talks about like different like ideas he had. Like, one of the, I'm going to get it wrong, but like one of the kind of people that he's going to mention is Keenigan or something like that. And it's basically like a ancient Rome or ancient something thing that stands for Kennedy. That's supposed to be Vince. And like, he's changed the streak in his hair to red because that relates to something. So everything matters, and he's got all these plans and ideas, and I can't wait. Bring it on.
I'm gonna have to listen to that podcast because it sounds really interesting, and I'd kind of love to hear the performer's perspective on everything that's going on right now too.
And yeah, maybe we'll, by the time we record the overrun, if you've been able to listen to it, we can talk about it then. So that could be a fun discussion to have. But yeah, I thought this was one of the best Dynamite episodes they've done. I'm probably giving them a lot of leeway based on the circumstances, but two big debuts, a fun night overall, lots of good stuff, so hopefully that can continue. They were very careful to say on the next Dynamite about a lot of stuff. So
yeah, they didn't say next week, and they didn't mention like where they were or anything like that, which, you know what? I mean, I think they're planning on having Dynamite next week, but at this point, you don't know. Like, you don't know if they're even going to be allowed to tape without fans, so we kind of just have to play things day by day, hour by hour at this point. But I'm really glad that we got the show that we did, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's it for us, everybody. We'll be back over the weekend with the Overrun. We'll be back at the beginning of next week with Retro ITR over on Patreon, where Sondra finally finds out what the main event of WrestleMania 2000 is. And
for fuck's sake. I'm so angry. Like,
see,
here's the plug for Patreon. For that retro episode, you actually hear, because I didn't know about the Mick Foley situation, y'all. I did not know that this was a thing. And so Kenny made me pause because we were watching retro together, and you actually hear me see Mick Foley and just kind of lose my mind, because I'm just like, you just retired. What's happening? So if you want to hear me actually like find out what the main event is in real time, sign up to Patreon and listen to Retro ITR, because I'm going to be complaining a lot, I feel.
Mick, you know, she's made out that she loves you. She didn't love you. She doesn't even
support you.
Doesn't even support you here getting your WrestleMania dream. She doesn't care that you wanted to be in the WrestleMania main event one time and your dream was going to come true. She doesn't care.
All I'm saying is that when you give an impassioned speech about how retirements need to matter, and you give an impassioned speech about how you've seen other wrestlers retire and how it's cheapened
his
when they just come back
Terry
right
Funk.
Away. I know! That's the problem! He went to the Terry Funk School of Retirement. But at least Terry Funk, he would retire in a promotion and then go to a different promotion. Mick Foley's just back! He's just back! It's a month later, he's just back.
What are the plugs, Sondra?
You can follow me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Tell me if you agree with me about Mick Foley not belonging in the main event of WrestleMania 2000. I mean, the Big Show doesn't fucking belong there either. But follow me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Follow Kenny at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can hear me lose my mind about these things, along with tons of other bonus content. And I mean, your contributions are really keeping us alive right now, because we can't run events. So thank you so much to everyone who signed up to Patreon in the past like week or so. I mean, thank you if you've been signed up too, but we've seen a number of new subscribers or people that have upped their subscriptions, and it's really appreciated. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can find video content, clips from our live events, interviews that Kenny has done. If you could subscribe to that and then like our videos and share them with your friends, that would be super dope. We would appreciate it. And I think that's it. I mean, our website's insidetheropes.co.uk. You can't buy anything there right now, I don't think.
I mean, you can buy tickets for Kevin Owens in June.
Kevin Owens, you can buy tickets for Kevin Owens.
You know,
in June.
I mean, I would probably hold off like another month just to make sure that that's like all good. We plan on it and we hope that that's going to be okay. But, you know, in these times where you probably need your money for the next month, you know, maybe wait till then. But yeah, thank you everybody for all your support. We really appreciate it. We will keep going, everybody. We will get through it.
We're still here.
And here to play us out in the spirit of Sammy Guevara, it is Judas by Fozzy. Because it's an absolute banger, and I love it.
It is.
We'll be back next week, everybody. Bye!
Bye.
Beautiful on the inside. You are innocence personified. And I will drag you down and serve.